Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's JJ. Doing this, we had to split this podcast up into two, JJ. It was such a big podcast.
Too big for one podcast. And
too long last week.
And too many podcasts for one podcast a week this week, too.
That's right. I think we are going to have three podcasts this week.
We're going to definitely have another one. If we can get Jim Callis on it, great. And if we can't, we're still doing a podcast to talk org talent rankings.
Pretty sure we're going to do that tomorrow morning. I'll forward the email to you. Apparently, I have not done that. But, yeah, we're going to have organization talent rankings that go over tomorrow. Jim Callis is already booked to be a podcast guest. So, good stuff. Good week at Baseball America this week. We are pleased to announce that this podcast is actually not being recorded in the podcast nook. Podcast nook undergoing some minor renovations, but also including a new machine. And, JJ, I do want to just start this podcast with a slight ode to old podcast computer. Because
there were so many great memories over the years. I remember it crashing in our chats on a regular basis. And I remember the five or six podcasts that just disappeared into the ether at different points. And
there are some podcasts out there that is lost to history. And some fine arguments, I'm sure. And that podcast, that computer was, what, more than a decade old, was it not? That was an old machine.
The Baseball America offices, we won't go into too much detail because we know you want to hear baseball, but we're very happy. The Baseball America office, we just had a computer upgrade. We're running modern technology now.
New ownership.
Thank you, Source Interleague.
Source Interleague Media, new ownership, Grind Media, Baseball America, part of the Grind Media group in Source Interleague. Source Interleague stepping up to the plate. So very excited about that. I'll drop this in for anyone at Source who's listening. You need to add us to the Source Interleague website. Yeah, well, there's no Baseball America thing on there on the Source Interleague website yet, so we look forward to that. But we're happy to be part of the Source family, and so far things are so good here at Baseball America. So let's dive into the Major League preview, JJ, the American League portion.
If you are listening to this and you're going, wait, where's the National League? Well, just it's here.
Let's
go back and the most recent previous non-college podcast, we broke down the entire NL. So now let's move to the AL.
And, JJ, you know, this is the way things go when you do any media. Some things that you write get outdated. And I'm just looking through our American League preview, our Major League preview issue. One of the most outdated pieces of this already is Dirk Hayhurst going to Italy. I guess Dirk's not going to Italy. That's kind of funny.
The Phillies aren't the juggernaut that they looked like. And
we talked about the National
League. We talked about them last week. They're less of a juggernaut than that.
I think we both were assuming not necessarily a healthy Chase Utley, but a 100-game Chase Utley. I don't think that's unreasonable, but now you've got Freddie Galvis. The National League East, we talked about last week, pretty wide open. There hasn't been a game changer in the American League yet in spring training, but we do have the Miguel Cabrera injury.
Yeah.
It looks relatively serious. I mean, it is to his face. Eddie Murphy Coming to America, yes, in the face.
It is another reminder. Miguel Cabrera, third base, I mean, which is something I think we've even said on the podcast. There's some healthy skepticism on our part of how well that's going to work. And
I think so. I think it's pretty funny. I love how the media reaction immediately afterwards was, well, that's a play that would have eaten up anybody. And it's like his glove was over here and his face was kind of far from his glove. I know it was a bad hop ground ball. I'm not making fun of the guy. But all those things being said, I love Jim Leland's reaction to it. Jim Leland said, is it going to be Brooks Robinson? I'm paraphrasing here. Is he going to be Brooks Robinson over there? No. Is he going to make the play on the balls he gets to because he does have one of the stronger arms in the league? I think so, yes. Is he going to hit a lot of home runs and drive in a lot of runs? Yes. And I think that's a best-case scenario for Detroit. Why don't we start with the Central, JJ? We're talking about Detroit.
Which you want to talk about what may be. I don't want to over-dramatize this, but
I don't think you will.
It may be one of the worst infield defenses that I can remember.
Especially if they're going with Prince. If Brandon Inge or Ryan Rayburn's at second, I mean, Brandon Inge would be the defensive option at second base. Certainly not the offensive option. And longtime listeners may know, while recognizing that he's not a good major league player, I love Brandon Inge. I saw him in a 1998 regional for VCU. He's one of the funnest. I saw him in the regular season. I remember VCU played at NC State that year, and I saw him again in the regional, which was won by eventual national champion Southern California that year. But VCU was third-place team in that regional. South Alabama with Watton Pierre was the runner-up. VCU with Brandon Inge. And he played a good shortstop, but that was 14 years ago. Many tats, a lot of squads behind home plate, and a lot of grinding major league and professional seasons ago for Brandon Inge. Then, of course, saw him in instructional league when he was making the conversion to catching all these years ago. So he's had a very unique career.
Very unique career.
But
that being said,
second base
is not what you would have foreseen all those many years ago when he started catching.
Right, or when he was playing third the last few years. He's built a little bit more like a second baseman than anything else in a lot of ways. But obviously Cabrera at third, and at shortstop, Johnny Peralta, a guy who was a pretty decent third baseman a couple years ago when the Indians finally gave up on him playing shortstop. So it's really not a ground ball infield.
The thing that is a little scary about that, and I think,
tough for Rick Porcello.
I think we both agree that the Tigers are clearly the class of the Central.
They are. They might be the class of the American League offensively.
But that being said, I just do worry about this because the slow pitch softball approach has some danger to it.
Yeah,
they're going to score a lot of runs. But
first of all, it's outdated. They're about 6 or 7 or 8 years too late on the slow pitch softball approach.
But beyond that, you do wear down your pitchers. What that means is it's not just that they're going to have higher ERAs. It also means that they're going to have innings that go longer.
That's right.
Well, that should have been two, but that didn't turn it. Or
it's a cumulative effect, I believe.
And I don't think that that's going to keep them from winning the Central, but I do wonder what that's going to mean come playoff time if we're still talking about the same kind of lineup come playoff time.
It's going to be fascinating to watch what happens with those guys. I feel like defensively they are going to, I think they're going to give up a lot of runs over the course of a year and, like you said, grind up their pitchers, and I really do worry about Rick Porcello, who's more of a ground ball guy than anything else.
They also have had a setback with Jacob Turner, which...
Right.
But Jacob Turner, if he did come up, same kind of thing. You're expecting him to get a lot of ground balls and...
He's a little bit more of a power pitcher, power repertoire, though, than Porcello is. He's not a carbon copy.
Right.
He's a little bit more of a power guy. But, but the pitchers, luckily for them, one of their better... we do have a question, actually, about the Tigers on Twitter. Robert Zukowski, because this is a listener, pretty consistent emailer as well, asks, reports are that Andy Oliver's finally featuring a plus slider this spring. Is or if this is true, what is his upside? I've always thought, JJ, that Andy Oliver did have a good breaking ball early in his college career and that he lost it. To me, this
NCAA
is kind of...
NCAA took it from...
That, along with or Oklahoma State's hopes. We actually talked about this on Monday's podcast with Aaron on the college podcast. But to me... He reminds me of I'm not going to say Alan Embry. He reminds me of a left-handed Alex White, because Alex White also used to have a really good slider. I'm sure there's something in his arm action that changed, something in his takeaway. There was something mechanical that changed with Andy Oliver that he once had the breaking ball and lost it. To me, if you can spin it, I don't think either of us have any first-hand reports from spring training, but it's believable. This is not like a guy who's always been a fastball changeup guy and never had a feel for spin, never had an ability to spin. He's always had the hand speed. You got to have hand speed to have velocity like he has, and he's always had the hand speed to spin a breaking ball. So it's plausible to me that he has a breaking ball. I think you've always kind of liked – you've never been as high on Jacob Turner as I am, so it wouldn't shock me. I thought that Drew Smyly had an outside shot to be like a nice sleeper rookie this year. I still think that's a possibility. Andy Oliver has a lot more experience at higher levels. If he is throwing a breaking ball with some confidence this spring, I would expect him to get a long, long look in Detroit.
Especially now that Turner, velo down, now that
right.
they have some injury concerns, you kind of take him out of that running. Well,
right.
there's an open opportunity there. And with Oliver, that it's one of those things where he has the chance to kind of mature into that role. The great thing about being with the Tigers, if he's a fifth starter, they don't need him to go out and dominate.
Right.
Outing after outing.
They need him to flash it.
They need him to show flashes, because if he can show flashes, then what you're talking about is, well, can this guy develop into, really, that's the upside of him. The downside of him is power reliever.
Right. That's why he was a good pick. Because a left-hander with that kind of arm strength, they're going to get something out of him. But the Tigers
are one thing. The Tigers system, one thing it has, they like guys with arm strength.
Right.
Clearly,
and we're recording this basically at noon on Wednesday. He's pitching in an hour, so we'll watch. Maybe we'll watch it and give you a little bit better scouting report on Twitter after we're done recording it. That's the only American League Central question that I see on Twitter. But JJ, the other team that's had a really rough spring in the American League Central is the Royals, and obviously we err on the side of the prospect. We err on the side of the young, exciting clubs. especially when we're prognosticating at a major league level. This podcast setup, by the way, I'm just going to walk around the whole time. This is awesome. The podcast nook is restrictive. Now I'm in my office. I can just walk around on the master of my domain. But we picked the Royals second in the division. I don't think we would do that if we had it to do over again with their spring.
That was pre-Salvador Perez missing half the season. That was pre-Joaquin Soria has an elbow ligament injury. No decision yet on surgery, but there is definite damage, they say. Well,
right. Usually
when there's definite damage, something follows on that. Well, you take away, if you said, I think I tweeted this out when it happened. If you wanted to pick the player on the Royals that they could least afford to lose, it was Salvador Perez. Not that Salvador Perez is the best player on that team.
He's not the Kendall Marshall of their team, but he was close.
But it is the player that everywhere else they have some pretty solid depth. They don't have that depth at catcher. We see that. Like, they just made a trade yesterday,
right. As
we record this, traded away Kevin Chapman and brought in Humberto Quintero.
Kevin Chapman, who looks an awful lot like, who do we confuse him for? I forget. John Lamb?
Yeah,
no. That's right.
But really, they had to make some sort of trade because they really didn't have any option at backup catcher.
Right.
Brian Pena, not an everyday catcher, but they didn't have anyone else that you could point to and say, yeah, you could give that guy one or two starts a week. There really wasn't. I think Cody Clark was the next option. Nothing against Cody Clark, but
Oy. Not
really.
I didn't realize that was
Manny
the case.
Manny Pena was their backup, was their number three option. He's hurt as well. So, and that was about probably the thinnest position in the organization. The next guy up was, if it's not Cody Clark, maybe Julio Rodriguez, who they picked up in a trade with the Tigers last year. Julio Rodriguez is not a big league catcher. So, the interesting thing with this is Jeff Lunau said, there's a player to be named, and that will be a significant piece of this trade. Well, Kevin Chapman by himself is a significant piece in that you put him on the Astros, and he's one of their better relief prospects they have now.
Well, they had no lefty arms. Having done their top 30 the last 2 years, they had very few, if any, homegrown left-handed options. I know I didn't rank a left-hander reliever in their top 30. I probably should be a little bit more prepared for this, but I think the depth chart might have just had two guys.
So Kevin Chapman becomes their best left-handed relief prospect.
He's a useful big league piece down the line, and yeah, Pat Urquhart, Alex Sogard, and Mitchell Lamson were the three guys I even listed as lefty relievers.
And beyond that, if they're getting something back even
that's a more significant piece.
If it's even equivalent to Chapman, you're talking about a guy who's definitely going to be, I would say, at least a top 20 prospect in the Astros system. Probably better than that. Chapman was 18.
I'm going to guess it's going to be someone like Derek Robinson or David Lowe. Makes some sense. Well, somebody who can play center field because the Astros gave up one of their plan Bs and Jason Bourgeois.
Which I didn't understand the Bourgeois part for the Royals, but that, you know.
Yes. I did not understand the Bourgeois part for the Royals.
That did not make sense to me because I don't see how him making their big league roster makes their big league roster better.
You know, Jason Bourgeois can hit left-handers. He did that very well last year at the major league level. I just don't, but he's not a super utility anymore. You really don't want him playing the infield. Maybe they have old reports. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of why you would.
But I understand
Jason Bourgeois, there are lots
part
of. Yeah.
Makes a whole lot of sense. But, okay. Sorry.
We're getting off track. But I think the Soria injury to me, JJ. It's going to have a ripple effect on this team. I don't like the Royals for second place in this division. To me, we picked the White Sox fifth. 2 through 5 in this division is completely up in the air.
Oh.
If Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau are healthy,
the Twins would be two.
Yeah, for me, they'd be two.
The reality is that I don't think that either of us think the Indians are a playoff contender. At the same time, if you get a reasonable season out of Grady Sizemore, you can't forget that this is much of the same team that last year was the class of the division in April and May.
They're like the anti-Tigers in terms of their pitching staff, too. The Tigers, where you have Verlander and Scherzer, these two big power arms, plus Fister, who's kind of a fly ball guy. Then you know, if Andy Oliver's in their fifth starter, you'd have a lot of power arms in that rotation. And really only Porcello would be the only kind of ground ball guy. And you know, the bullpen is, again, a strikeout, fly ball kind of bullpen. the Indians are the complete opposite between Derek Lowe, Ubaldo Jimenez. It's just a bunch of hyper – Justin Masterson. It's just hyper ground balls.
Ground ball. And they do have a better infield defense than – not a great one, but
they do,
one
but
than
yeah,
Detroit.
Jason Kipnis
– But it's not what you would design if you said, hey, we're going to have a ground ball staff.
Yeah, Kipnis and Chisenhall, those guys aren't – they're better than whoever's going to play second and Miguel Cabrera. But this is not exactly, you know, rolling out Scott Rolen and a bunch of this is not, just to put it in strat terms, it's not a bunch of ones on defense. It's a bunch of threes. You're going to have a lot of they're average defenders who are going to have to be above average, I think, for that pitching staff to really maximize its potential.
And I think what we're really saying is that any of these teams almost, even the Royals still, the Royals could still be second in this division, I think, if everything breaks right for them. But they could be fifth. The White Sox, we picked fifth. They could be second. I don't see any of these. The Tigers really have to fall flat for them not to win this division, I think, right now. But you're right. I think it's a jumble after that.
I really do. And the thing about the Tigers, even with their defensive issues, and that could be evident in the postseason, we've seen in postseasons what it can mean to have a duo like that in the middle. I know I've made this comparison before, but they just remind me so much of Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz in the middle of the lineup. And as good as Ryan Braun is, Miguel Cabrera is better. He's, I would even say, significantly better than Ryan Braun because he's so much more patient offensively. And that's just as good a duo as there is in baseball. Well, and that duo with the surrounding pieces performing well, that's going to be a ferocious offense come postseason for Detroit. They're the American League favorite.
I'm not going to pick them as my favorite though.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is that that's true. That's a ferocious middle of the lineup.
And I love their power arms. I love their front three of Verlander, Fister, and Scherzer.
I like that too. That being said, I do think the other thing we saw was what stood out like with the Rangers last year was how deep the lineup was.
Yeah.
And depth of a lineup can be as scary as having a monstrous middle.
No doubt, but they did have a monster middle of Hamilton and Beltre.
They did.
I mean, those
but
two
the
guys
other
were,
thing that they had,
they had Nelson Cruz.
They had Nelson Cruz. They had Mike Napoli. They had it where it was like, okay, got through that guy. Oh,
right.
Crap, who I got next? Oh, and then who's on? Oh, and you were something where it was like there were very few rest spots
right.
in that lineup. And that's
right.
where I think right now, to me, man, it's going to be a great – the AL, let's be honest, the AL is just
– it's loaded.
It's a notch above the NL right now.
You mentioned the Rangers. Let's talk about the American League West. The American League West is going to be a fascinating two-team race for first place and for playoff spots. I mean, the Rangers and the Angels, I think, are both obviously loaded. JJ, let's talk real quick about the Mariners and the A's.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mariners and A's, even with a second wild card, we're not really in the running teams.
The A's are going to be fascinating, though. Now we have Yoenis Cespedes to watch in center field. You know, we have disgruntled Coco Crisp saying, like, I wouldn't have signed back here if I'd known I was going to go to left field. If I'd known this was going to be this kind of party, I would have maybe signed somewhere else. They sent Jared Parker down, so one less interesting guy. He's not going to make the big league club
Absolutely.
Out of camp. But the A's, at least it almost feels like Yoenis Cespedes, that signing was, please pay attention to us for the next 2 years, fans.
Right, but that being said, though, I do think he's going to have some growing pains, and so which fits well because I think it's a team that's going to have some growing pains.
I agree. They're going to have some spurts where they're going well and some where they don't.
I do think for him, I know that there was recently a story came out. He said, "Well, I almost signed with the Cubs, but the Cubs wouldn't give me the same number of years that I wanted that the A's did. I wanted 4 or 8, and they wanted 6." I think he's better off for his development being with the A's because he's with a team where really he can kind of figure this out at the big league level, and there's not a whole lot of pressure there.
I don't think there's any pressure playing for the Cubs. You know, let's be realistic. I mean, I know that they still have high payrolls. They're obviously trying to get out from underneath those payrolls, but the Cubs don't have a ton of competition now. I mean, Marlon Byrd would be better suited on an outfield corner anyway. For me, I think the Cubs would have been a good fit for him as well. But Oakland, there could be no less scrutiny almost in the major leagues. You're playing in anonymity almost as much for the A's as for anywhere else. No player is going to be a bigger star than the general manager.
What about Seattle?
Well, Seattle is going to be fascinating to watch. I want to see what Jesus Montero does there. And I kind of wonder how the Mariners how long they'll hold off on their young pitchers coming up to the major leagues, but they seem like they have enough, you know, pieces to hold it in there. I like their chances better than Oakland's, but I just don't see them having the firepower either on the mound or in the lineup to contend with either the A's or the Angels or the Rangers.
The guy I'm very interested to see what happens this year, it's not Dustin Ackley, it's not Jesus Montero, it's Justin Smoke.
He's got to kind of sink or swim this year, JJ.
This is the year. If we come to the end of this year and you go, you know, Smoke hadn't really figured it out, I think at that point you've got to say in Seattle, okay, well, we're going on.
His chances of being a star pretty much end, in my mind, if he doesn't really make significant progress this year.
He's the Pedro Alvarez of the American League.
That's right, and they were always going to be linked together. They were in the same draft in 2008, compared and contrasted as the top two bats in that draft. They were teammates with the USA World Cup team in 2009, gold medal USA World Cup team. They're always going to be compared to each other. Obviously played against each other for 3 years.
And right now they're getting compared to each other, and it's not a good comparison.
It's not flattering. But Justin Smoke's had some. I have a little bit more faith in Smoke. I have faith in both players coming through. I have a little bit more in Smoke just because he's had some off-field stuff, whether it was the eye injury last year or the year before where his grandfather died and getting traded. But he's had a few more adjustments to make than Alvarez.
The Mariners need, like, if you said, to me, he's the guy, you think that Ackley's going to hit, you think that Montero's going to hit, you hope that, if you're the Mariners fan, you hope that Ichiro kind of goes back to being more of Ichiro than you saw last year.
At least a dead cat bounce.
Right. Well, but to me, if that lineup is going to produce runs, the guy that you've got to get kind of, you don't say unexpected, but the guy who you've got to get something from is, if you get something from Smoke, then all of a sudden,
To contend, they have to count on Justin Smoke, and he's just not proved yet that he's someone that you can count on. So the other aspect out there, obviously, to watch is I think they have to show some signs of life to help their case for keeping Felix Hernandez long-term. You know, that's obviously part of the equation there going forward, and we'll see. I mean,
the signs of life for that though, will very much probably be at some point
not lose
season
90
or late
games.
Season when you bring up these other arms and you say, hey, there is some hope here.
Right. Between Danny Hultz, I expect to see both Danny Hultz and James Paxton in the major league sometime this year. Best case scenario for them, you don't see them until September. You know, and they're getting their feet wet so they can really make an impact next year.
Okay, so let's move on to the
Rangers versus Angels. Who do you got, JJ?
Rangers.
See, I think the Angels are going to be the team there. I just like their starting pitching better than Texas. As good as Texas's starting pitching could be, and as interesting as Yu Darvish is this year, I still think that there's a little bit of an unknown there. And C.J. Wilson would still be, even if it was still in Texas, he'd be your number two starter there in Texas. And what is he, the four guy with the Angels? I love their starting pitching.
One of the things I love with the Rangers is I feel like that they have a couple things. One, I feel like that they have a depth.
They have a deeper roster and more ways to beat you than any team in baseball.
I'll put it this way. When we said, like, this is the guy the Royals couldn't lose. Josh Hamilton, I think the Rangers, to me, Josh Hamilton's the guy you point to and say, well, they can't lose him. I think if the Rangers lost Josh Hamilton for a month or two, they could figure out a way around it.
I agree.
I don't think that there's anyone. Yu Darvish, if Yu Darvish we found out tomorrow, which it's not, this is a hypothetical in case you just tuned in,
right?
You know, skipped a little ahead. But if Yu Darvish, something happened to him and he missed the season, I guess we got to put Ogando back in the rotation.
Right.
Darn. You know, it's not something where they don't have a guy that they have to depend on because they have such depth.
Right.
They have.
And if someone gets hurt, they can. No one has the farm system to go out and make a trade like they do.
I'll put it this way: if you want, and to me, Michael sticks with them and is very useful for them at some point. But he also, right now, his best position, he's blocked.
Right.
Well, with that being the case, if you hit June or July, and you needed to make a move, Michael could, if he has the first half of the season we expect, that's a Justin Smoke sized trade ship like they did a couple of years ago.
It is. It's quite comparable. That's a great point to kind of compare him to Smoke. You've also got another third baseman in your farm system, Christian Villanueva, who made our top 100.
I don't think there's anything that would get you to trade away Jurickson Profar, but I'll put it this way: if you say that
no one has a better trade chip,
because
I don't think you see Harper or Trout getting dealt.
He is. as great as he is blocked at his best position
right.
in that organization. Or at least, if not blocked, they have someone ahead of him playing at the big league level who you don't, you know, who you really like. So they have these potential trade chips if they need to use them. Now, they probably don't even need to use those guys.
Right.
They could make some more of the Joe Wieland, Robbie Erlin style trades and do pretty well.
Both guys we like. Both guys are pretty good. Guys who are nothing to sneeze at. You know, guys who'd be, you know, top prospects in a lot of good farm systems because they're pitchers who throw strikes. They're young for they were young for their league last year, but had success in Double A at a proper age. They both have good stuff. They're just not front line starting pitchers. So they have. There's not a lot more where that came from in terms of those kind of pitchers, but they do have other good young arms coming through their farm system.
And whereas the Angels, the thing I think that the danger, the Rangers have depth.
The Angels definitely have less wiggle room. There's no
question
about that.
Less wiggle room. But the other thing is the Angels have old guys who you have to, I don't want to say coddle, but in some ways coddle. It's something where you have, and I don't want to get too much into, I think sometimes clubhouse, you know, dynamics and all get overplayed. But you've got guys like, you know, you've got, okay, well, how are we going to get at-bats for Abreu? Where are we going to fit in Trumbo? Those are good problems to have.
Right.
And the reality of this is that right now, Mike Trout hasn't played enough in spring training to where it's a problem that he's not going to start the season.
Yeah, he's really not a factor. You know, their right. outfield depth is actually going to be a good thing because right now Trout hasn't played and Jeremy Moore might need surgery on his hip. So there's two of their young athletic guys who, if one of the older guys gets hurt, they have that versatility. But between Morales and Abreu, they still have Ann Trumbo. They still have plenty of guys. I still feel like if they needed to play Vernon Wells or Torrey Hunter in center field for a short spell, they would do that if Borges got hurt. And Peter Borges' speed makes – I think he does reduce the wear and tear on both those veteran corner guys.
But that being said, that's some of the things, the dynamics you have to work out. Those are good problems to have. At the same time, those are problems in some ways when you are having – because they're asking guys to play – like with Trumbo, okay – where are you going to get him at bats?
That's going to be a challenge for them.
Is he going to play some third base? Is that going to work out?
Right.
That's a Miguel Cabrera-esque third base possibilities. You know.
Not even as good. Not even as good.
And so, to me, the Rangers don't have those questions.
I still think that those are nitpicking. Those are pretty nitpicky questions.
Oh.
I still
I think both of these teams are playoff teams, and who finishes one or two probably is not going to make a whole lot of difference necessarily.
But I love the... I like the fact that, okay, you have Weaver, Heron, Wilson, Santana. There's very few teams in the major leagues that have a foursome. That's a fearsome foursome.
It is.
You have Garrett Richards and Jerome Williams fighting for that fifth spot. Jerome Williams is one of my favorite stories in the big leagues. Guy who's in the wilderness, came back, was effective last year in the major leagues, pitched well in winter ball,
right.
having a good spring.
And the good
Garrett
thing
Richards,
about it is,
you have some pitching depth there.
Right, you probably,
you're going to need six
here's
starters,
how you do
probably.
That. Here's how you do that, realistically. You hand it to Williams. I mean, this is one of those things
yeah,
that teams
Garrett
always
Richards
say.
For.
But you hand it to Williams because Richards is in the back pocket. And you
right.
say, if you can keep it up, hey. And if you can't, we've got the guy to replace you.
Absolutely. I like their bullpen. I like Scott Downs, Jordan Walden. I like some of their power arms back there. I think Richards could be a factor back there.
I
think Johnny Helwig could be a factor back there come postseason time. A fascinating feature about Johnny Helwig coming up on our minor league preview issue. But to me, it all comes down to the guys who are actually – I know they don't have the Rangers' depth or versatility. They have the deepest, most versatile roster in the big leagues. But when it comes down to just what that starting lineup's going to look like, I like the Angels
right.
lineup as good or better than anybody's. And I love the Chris Iannetta acquisition. They upgraded so significantly behind the plate. I also expect – that Mike Napoli's going to crash a little bit back to earth.
Yeah, you'd be shocked if he did the same thing he did this
right.
year, because last year he was one of the best players in baseball.
And I think the Angels have
he had not
the,
been one of the best players in baseball before last year.
And I think the Angels have a couple of the more underrated players in the game, actually. I think Peter Borges, and yes, Peter Borges is Greek, so but I think he's underrated. I think Eric Ibar is underrated. I think Howie Kendrick really emerging. So I like the Angels. Just the guys, their frontline guys.
Getting Kendrys Morales back, if Kendrys Morales is the Kendrys Morales he was pre-injury,
right.
that's a...
And that's what I'm saying. I like their starting lineup as good as Texas's. I think Texas' defense is probably a hair better. And I like the starting rotation for the Angels better. So
the guys,
I understand
the,
they aren't as deep.
They're,
they have a less balanced, really flawed roster in some ways, but I like their star power. And I think they're going to outlast the Rangers.
We do have to acknowledge, though, at the same time, with the Rangers, there still is a question about center field. Because Leonis Martin, they've pretty much said, not ready.
Yeah.
Not ready. Got a lot to work on.
Pedro
so then
Bourbon,
your question begins.
Not a dude.
Not there, Craig Gentry, or do you say, you know what? Because I think
that I called him Pedro. It's Julio Bourbon.
Yeah, Julio Bourbon. Pedro, you know, the Bourbon senior and junior.
Both no longer relevant.
But it is something where you eventually, if none of those guys, what ends up happening is you either trade for someone or Josh Hamilton ends up back at center at some point.
Right, exactly.
And that's what you're trying to avoid in some ways. But that is so. It's not like that. There's not flaws there too.
That's the thing. They have nice star power in their lineup. At the same time, they have several spots where they're going to be below average, below league average in center field, first base, maybe even DH, depending on how Michael Young continues to age, although I know the DHs aren't hitting like they used to. Shortstop, they're probably going to be league average. So I like Texas, obviously.
Well,
a lot to
again,
like.
We think both of these teams are playoff teams.
I do. I think they're both playoff teams. I think Detroit's an easy playoff team. We're both saying the American League East is a one playoff division.
Two.
Oh, yeah, two. Oh, yeah, they're five. Hello.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this to me, like, this becomes...
I think the American League East team will be the fifth, though. I really do. I think that division is stronger and deeper. I think the A's and the Mariners are going to get beat up a little bit.
Yeah, that's the difference, is that, like, you look in the East and you say, the Blue Jays we pick as number four. You put the Blue Jays in the Central, and I'm
They're
talking,
the number two team.
They're the number two team, and I would give them... considering the Central, I'd say, you know, they're the team who actually could give the Tigers a run.
Absolutely. And they would give the Tigers a run in that division.
You put them in the East and you go, you're doing a lot of good things. I don't know if you're there yet.
Now, we picked the Yankees as a staff to win the American League East. But I think the funny thing is, as a staff, we picked the Rays as one of the wild card teams and then to win the American League pennant.
Which you can make the argument, which is that come playoff time,
yeah,
that's a staff you don't want to face in the playoffs.
That's the pitching staff I would take over. I would say I would like better than the Angels in terms of its first foursome, because you have two left-handers and Price and Moore like that, then Hellickson, and then you pick the fourth, whether it's Jeff Niemann or Wade Davis or James Shields. I would pick James Shields right now. Both Wade
Davis. The Rays will pick James Shields because they still talk about him as.
Right. And Jeff Niemann was having a great spring, and his last start wasn't so hot, and Wade Davis had been struggling, and his last start was pretty good. So I don't know what they're going to do with that six-man rotation. Maybe they should go Japanese style and use a six-man rotation, JJ, and use it. But they, you know, their starting pitching is so good.
That would be fascinating. Like, hey, we're going to go every 6 days, and by the way, but we're expecting you to go 125, 130.
That's right. You're going to go 120 pitches every start.
But you're only going to start every six.
It would be fascinating to watch. That's almost the college approach. You're going to start once a week. That one start, you will pitch 140 pitches, and I do not care what happened in the third. You will still be pitching in the seventh. So,
you know,
not every school, obviously, but that is the approach some colleges take.
But that being said, so we love the Rays rotation.
Yes.
What do you think about the offense?
I do think it gets, on paper, it gets better, Pena. Bring them more power. They need more power. You get every day Desmond
Pena.
James.
I do feel like with Carlos Pena that you're always like, okay, which Carlos Pena are we getting? Are we getting the really good Carlos Pena, or are we getting the hits home runs?
Even really good Carlos Pena hits 260.
Right.
You know?
But I'm saying that's the really good Carlos Pena. Or are we getting the 190? And I know batting, you know, he still gets on base some, but are we getting the guy who, you know, you get a lot of strikeouts power?
I thought their cumulative approach worked really well with a contact kind of the way Casey Koshman hit last year. That worked really well for them.
Yeah. When
to
you
me, their
say
offense
that's an upgrade,
gets, yeah.
The reality of this is that you could see a scenario where when you look at the end, not that Carlos Pena is not a better player than Casey Koshman, but Casey Koshman has such a good season for them last year.
Right. It's going to be hard
it may
to upgrade
not be,
there.
He may not produce more run, you know.
I think they will a little bit. I think it'll be a marginal upgrade there. I think Desmond Jennings for a full season is the biggest upgrade. And then,
but,
you know, JJ last year, their catcher and shortstop
spots
were just complete zeros. And now you have Reed Brignac, who's hurt. He's got plantar fasciitis, however you pronounce it. So shortstop's a hole. And behind the plate, they're really just going catch and throw. Jose Lobaton, Jose Molina, it's catch and throw for Tampa.
They have two – when you say that, okay, there are no – like we were talking about, well, there's not many – There's not many breathing spots, you know, safe zones in that lineup.
They have a couple safe
zones.
There
are a couple where you're like, okay, well, this is an AL, but I'm facing
that's
pitcher
right.
equivalent.
You're facing these guys, and you're pretty much going to be pitching like it's like you're 1910. You know, I can, I'm not in a pinch. I can go easier on these guys. But I still do think that they have to get, just by the law of, just by regressing to the mean.
Their shortstop production.
They're
going to
get a little bit better at those spots. That's right. So, for me, I like their offense. I kind of like the Luke Scott acquisition, as a DH to give them some more left-handed power. I think their bullpen will be better with a healthy J.P. Howell. They've got some more options from the left side. More maturing Jake McGee. I like the Fernando Rodney acquisition for them. Joe Maddon's the separator for that team, besides their starting pitching.
The interesting thing is this is one year I can think of, though. They still have excellent starting pitching depth. Like, if they're beyond the six.
Oh, yeah.
They have a 7 and an 8 that you wouldn't.
Yeah, Alex Torres and Alex Cobb are big league ready guys. They're back of the rotation guys. Torres has a little bit more lively stuff.
They're a team that could survive two starting pitcher injuries where you say,
I agree.
They're still throwing guys out there who are representative guys. You're not saying, okay, well, we just have to pray that we're going to win today.
And if they get in the danger zone, they can always go to Chris Archer. Pun intended.
Nicely done.
Pun intended.
The Yankees, I do also like a lot of what the Yankees did in the offseason because I think that they finally addressed one of the problem they had going into last season. Okay, hey, you know what? We can't just piece together a rotation behind CC
right.
and see how it works out.
Not when A.J. Burnett's one of those pieces. Yeah, he just wasn't the right fit in New York. So the Pineda trade, I think we both think that could be a real win-win. What do you think of the Pettit signing, J.J.? Is that a sign of desperation? What did you make of that?
I don't see it as desperation because I see it as, what's the downside on that?
Well, you block some of your younger pitchers. What if you have to wind up signing down Ivan Nova? What do you think if you still have faith in Phil Hughes, I took it as a vote of no confidence in Phil Hughes.
I think there's a fair vote. Like
okay.
I think that but,
see,
but I
mean,
think
the
that
guy
they look
has,
at it. I think that they look at it as
Phil Hughes has been good in the major leagues.
Oh, I'm not
I think
saying
he can be good. I think
I'm
he can
not
be good
he
again.
Hasn't, and I do think that he's a guy who it may behoove him to get out of New York at this point.
That's
that
possible
being said,
too.
I think the Yankees look at it as who would we rather have penciled in for October, Pettit or Phil Hughes. For one with Phil Hughes, Pettit may be a whole lot older. We feel more confident that Pettit will be there and ready to throw.
And I think also the injury, I know it's not terribly serious, but the injury to David Robertson, Phil Hughes has thrived in that role. In the past, Jabba Chamberlain has thrived in that role. If he comes back, and the Yankees are looking internally, they have middle relief options. And replacing David Robertson is really difficult. That guy has been so good for them. And, again, talk about suited to New York. That guy wants the ball in the late innings, and Rafael Soriano only wants the ball in the ninth, you know, it seems like. So that sign did not work out as well for them. To me, the bigger question for the Yankees is just, again, their athleticism and especially their infield defense as they age with A-Rod, Jeter, Teixeira, to a lesser degree, Cano.
Seems to be a theme with a lot of the better, teams in the AL.
Yeah, it is. I think it is a theme. And, we'll see how, to me, again, as I've said all offseason, I thought the Yankees really had I wouldn't say a crying need, but they had a need for Jesus Montero. I thought they needed a young, right-handed power bat in the middle of their lineup to complement all their lefty bats, and they stayed old. They've decided that power right-handed bat is going to be Andrew Jones, who I know was pretty good for them last year in that limited role. But for me, Russ Martin had two good months last year. A-Rod's 36, 37 years old, past his prime. So, and Derek Jeter, the same thing. So I still think they're vulnerable in the right in the wrong matchup in a playoff series.
Are the Red Sox going to – where do you see – I mean, I
– it's hard to see Boston being in the same class to me as New York and Tampa. I just don't think they are. You have a rotation at the top of Beckett, Lester, and Buchholz, where Beckett and Lester really folded, collapsed down the stretch, obviously. Buchholz couldn't stay healthy. You have two converted relievers in the mix, and Aceves and Bard. Looks like Bard is going to stay in the rotation. Aceves maybe not, and that's a little iffy. Their bullpen looks better, but you know, the Red Sox are still paying for mistakes in their player development on the pitching side. They have not. We've chronicled. Alex Spears written about it at WEI.com. They just haven't developed homegrown pitchers well since Buchholz and Lester. Those are two pretty great examples, but you can't just have the one wave. Even the Red Sox can't just have the one wave when it comes to prospects, JJ.
We just talked about it, how with the teams they're battling with the Yankees, okay, if Pettit doesn't work out, hey, Phil Hughes, you know, in the rotation, Ivan Nova.
Right.
With the Rays, we've got six big league starters now, and
right,
we've got two more in reserve.
For the Red Sox, yeah, Felix Dubront is pretty important for them. He's having a decent spring. He's really got to be. He's going to pitch a lot of major league innings this year.
The reality is the Red Sox, if they have one of their big pitchers go down, there's not a whole lot of obvious choices of, hey, this is the guy, the next guy up.
Yeah.
Even the guys who they had who failed at that role last year, some of them aren't in the organization anymore.
And the Papelbon, losing Papelbon. I like their setup guys better. I love Mark Melanthan as a setup guy. I like Andrew Bailey quite a bit. But
I do like their approach that they basically, as far as the pen,
yeah,
they didn't depend on one guy. They said, we're
right,
going to find numbers.
But you look at their lineup, and, you know, their shortstop is, I wouldn't say it's a mess, but shortstop is not a strength for them. Behind the plate is iffy. I'm not sure about their right field situation. It looks like it's going to be Cody Ross and maybe Ryan Kalish. You know, I mean, not profile power in right field for this team. So there's some real legitimate questions. I could even see Toronto supplanting Boston if some things break Toronto's way. Like, you know, for example, Brett Lowry being a super stud. Because they don't have the right-left combination that we're talking about for some of the other clubs, but you're going to be hard-pressed, JJ, to find two guys in the lineup with the bat speed that Jose Bautista and Brett Lowry have. In terms of pure bat speed, that might be the best 1-2 punch in the major leagues.
And you throw into it that, again, that's an organization that has developed. You know, they have a lot of talent in the farm system, so if they are in the running, well, I don't want to overemphasize this because there aren't
right,
that many deadline deals that change
right,
pennant races.
But like, if there was a Cliff Lee who's out there on the market,
if they need a guy, they can get a guy because they have the farm system to do that.
If there was ever a team that could use a big lefty bat in between Lowry and Bautista, it's this club. So, you know, that's why they're not quite in that conversation. They do have interesting left-handed hitters. Adam Lind, Eric Thames, been a little bit better. I think we thought he would be. Even Kelly Johnson, Colby Rasmus, two young guys who, I guess Johnson's kind of a veteran.
To me, Colby Rasmus is the guy who, if he figures it out,
he's in that
Justin Smoak category of a guy who, you know, and you can't say he can't figure it. Like, if he has a Cameron Maybin 2011,
yeah,
the year where it's like, after we've waited all this time.
That's right.
This year it kind of comes
example.
Together. Because, I mean, you've got – look, you can't help but compare. It was the four were. It was Upton, it was Maybin, it was Rasmus, and it was Jay Bruce.
Oh, five, McCutchen.
Yeah, and five, McCutchen. You're right. Well, right now, Colby.
Yeah.
You're fifth.
Absolutely, fifth with an anvil sinking to the bottom.
So let's see. Let's see if you're in that discussion anymore or not.
And we'll see who to blame. Is it you or is it La Russa? You had no one left to blame. You know. I know he's not the manager there anymore, but Cito Gaston's always there to help young hitters in Toronto, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. JJ, let's just dive into the Twitter questions
okay. Before
we finish the podcast.
I got a Mitch 3363. When do you think Gary Brown will reach the majors, and who do you compare him to? I know you're.
I like Gary Brown.
You're a Gary Brown fan.
I'm not sure who I'd compare him to. I mean, honestly, he's kind of like a more offensive Peter Borges. I mean, but he's got similar. Peter Borges had double-digit home runs last year. I think Gary Brown will do that. I think he'll hit for a higher average, but otherwise the games are pretty similar. I don't think he's quite the game-changer defensively that Borges is, but in terms of speed, electric, just an electric runner. You know, Gary Brown's just, he's a pretty unique player.
When he'll reach the majors. Okay, if you go by the Giants' approach to center fielders.
Tomorrow.
It'll be about 7 years from now.
That's right.
Turn 30.
That's right. I'm the opposite, right? That was a fascinating stat you dug up. What was it again?
That basically, the Giants' center fielder, everyday center fielder, and there is a year like in 2007 where they didn't really have an everyday. Like, to me, to be an everyday, you had to at least play 82 games
right,
in center.
That's reasonable.
You know, you have to play half the season to center. They haven't had an everyday center fielder under the age of 30. And I would say that their average age of their center fielder is closer, is on the upside of 35.
Right.
Since 2001.
I do think that...
Jerry Brown will change that. That will be he will be the guy who will fix that.
I don't know how old he is, but I do think Angel Pagan is a really good placeholder for that team. I know that he's not quite the guy that he was a couple of years ago with the Mets, and he's older than 30, so he fits in.
He fits perfectly.
Yeah, he's 30. Well, he's 30. He'll be 31 this year.
I was going to say, I remember him in the 02, I want to say 02, 03 when I was doing the Mets.
Right. I don't expect him to be 694 ops Angel Pagan. I don't expect him to be 837 ops Angel Pagan. If he's in that 760 ops range like he was in 2010, to me that Angel Pagan is a nice, that'd be a nice piece for the Giants. The guy really to watch there is Melky Cabrera. You know, is he last year Melky or which Melky is he?
Because if he's last year Melky, we said this, I think, in the last podcast. If he's last year Melky, all of a sudden he's one of the better, I mean, he's center, as not great center fielder from the standpoint of defensively, but he's one of the more productive center fielders in baseball, which is crazy to say.
Absolutely. Yeah, he would be. He'd be a very productive
player.
Because
if he does it 2 years in a row, at that point you go, okay, this wasn't a fluke.
JJ, I've got a question here from Matt Hansen. He's so hot right now. Matt Hansen, M. Hansen 324 on the Twitter. Have we been watching Chris Parmalee of late? Is he making adjustments and getting better or simply getting lucky? He made the adjustments last year, JJ, and I don't think he's getting lucky. This guy was a first-round pick in 2006. There's been no real need to rush him, but he also has taken it slow. Yeah, this is a guy whose swing has been tinkered with over and over
They've
in his minor league career.
He
has absolutely been a tinkerer. And to my understanding, last year he really settled on a swing and he stopped tinkering. He picked one and stuck with it. You know, he took the Oprah advice.
At some point, you have to do that.
You have to,
because unless you're Cal Ripken and you just say, okay, every couple of years I'm just going to completely change.
But I mean, I think he's legit. That's why we ranked him in the top 10 this year, and we hadn't done that before. Now I'm looking at him in the prospect handbook. He's got the bug eyes. That's not a good mugshot for Chris Parmalee. But he seems very excited to be in our prospect handbook with that photo. But I think the bigger issue for Chris Parmalee, I think he'll hit for average. I think the power that he showed in Target Field last year was a little fluky. He had the 4 home runs in September. Matt Eddy with a great chart that he had on BaseballAmerica.com last week. I believe it's on the prospect blog, where he broke down the statistics and which ballparks hinder and help your power. And you know, Target Field suppresses power for left-handed power hitters, which is, of course, you know, with Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau, not exactly convenient for the way their team is presently constructed. But if Justin Morneau has a recurrence of his concussion issues, I do feel like while he's cheap, Chris Parmalee is a good replacement-level, solid average player.
And that's the thing you've got.
Not replacement-level, solid average.
But that's a useful thing you just said. It's like,
while he's cheap.
There are guys who are solid for you, and the minute that they become expensive, you go, okay, this guy's not good enough to pay a lot of money to.
I agree. So I do think I don't think he's lucky. I think he's legit. I think he has gotten better. I think he is a legitimate option for the Twins as an everyday first baseman if Morneau's in trouble.
I got one here, Objes guy 44, O-B-J-E-S guy 44.
Oh, I see it, yeah.
Who's asking, who has been the most involved team in Latin America the last 3 years? The Jays are up there, right? I think we agree on who's the most involved.
I can't. Well, the Rangers.
Rangers.
The Rangers are the most
Rangers
involved.
Are the most involved.
And the Yankees are always right there. The American League's old guard of involved, you know, dominating Latin America are Seattle and New York. The Yankees and the Mariners. The Mariners are probably the most international of organizations. Players from the most, always spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of prospects. That's the Seattle Mariners. Whether it's Italy, Japan, Nicaragua, wherever, they're there. But the Rangers have outspent everybody. In a lot of ways, they've outworked everybody in Latin America. They get credit for both. We'll see how the Jairo Berra stuff shakes out. We've discussed that, obviously, on the podcast, and Ben Badler has written about it at length. But to me, the Rangers have been, in the last 3 years, the most active. Those three organizations, to me, kind of set themselves apart.
And I'm going to flip the question, because, you know, we talk about this a little bit, too.
I'd put the Indians and the Jays in that next tier.
Right. On the other hand, now, there are Ben Badler, if you're a subscriber, he's pushing out. You know, we got the AL Central went up today. He also put out some great charts last week, which were available for anyone.
It's a chart on how
much everyone spent last year. And the thing that jumps out is, it's like if you say who are the least involved in Latin America, We talked about this a little bit on the last podcast. You know, Dodgers,
yeah.
White Sox,
Orioles. And also the Orioles have been the least involved for a long time. In the study, one piece of our minor league preview, some charts, and all this is going to go up online next week, I believe, that Connor Glassy did. We took a snapshot, December 7th, 2011, the day that will live in infamy as the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. But on that day was a snapshot that Connor looked at all guys on 40-man rosters plus free agents. It's like a pool of about 1,200 players, and basically broke down where they came from and sliced them and diced them. And out of all those 1,200 players, there were two international signees for the Baltimore Orioles on any of those rosters. Koji Uehara, who was a major league free agent from Japan, and Pedro Florimon, who was the fringiest of the fringe.
They've
been a non-factor completely.
You got any more?
Yeah, definitely. There's several more. Jimbo, who's also been on our podcast with some questions before. Don't think the Rangers are better off with Scott Feldman or Alexio Gondo in the rotation than Neftali Feliz. JJ, I don't know if I'd say better off. I think Neftali Feliz's arm is just so good, but that's it. They're flexible. If Feliz falls on his face, put him right back in the bullpen and bring Ogando back in the rotation if you need to. I think that's just to be determined.
To me, it's with that. Okay, if it works out with Feliz, I think, has more potential to be an ace or be a front-end rotation guy than Ogando. And if it doesn't work out, that just means that you managed to limit Ogando's innings this year, which isn't a bad thing either.
Also, I agree, not a bad thing. We also have a couple other ones. I want to make sure I read the right ones because I have too many East Carolina love replies in here as well. Now, this last one is from Norberto Paulino. Rookies that we think can surprise and help their team in 2012. I thought you already mentioned one earlier who could be a surprise. We kind of talked about that with the Tigers. It wouldn't shock me if Drew Smyly wound up being an important part of the rotation. I think that some left-hander pitching in their rotation this year would behoove them between Scherzer, Verlander, Pfister, Porcello. It's a pretty right-handed club. Wouldn't shock me if Smyly were in that. Also wouldn't shock me even if Adam Wilk, who's an off-speed guy, makes some productive starts for Detroit. But I don't think any of those left-handers are rookie of the year caliber for them.
Doing Bapper every day, a couple of guys that just jump out. And I'm not really saying any of these are rookie of the year guys. Freddie Galvis just became very important to
right.
the Phillies.
Yeah, he did.
He's going to learn how to play second base on the job. They really don't have, Martinez got hurt yesterday. They don't have any other options, really. So
I guess they really don't, do they?
They may go out for a trade, but if not, Freddie Galvis is their second baseman until Chase Utley's back, it looks like. And I don't think either of us are real confident that Galvis will hit enough to do that right yet. I think both of us feel like
he should be very.
I don't know how he's
going to
turn the double play. I'll say this: his range at second should be. I don't want to go as far as to say Alomar-esque, but it should be.
Probably should be better than Roberto Alomar.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the way that Bill James keeps him and the way the
right.
advanced but, metrics say.
But I do think that he could be. He's going to be very important for them. Defense should be special. He's going to hit seventh or eighth in that lineup at least.
I'm fascinated to watch both the Asian left-handers that the Orioles signed this year. I'm not saying they're going to be great. But Wei-Yin Chen and Tsuyoshi Wada. I've been a Tsuyoshi Wada fan for a long time, but Chen sounds a little bit more. There's more upside there.
But let's be honest. If we're talking about that, though, we got to talk about Hisashi Iwakuma, who we both.
Hisashi Iwakuma. We both do love Hisashi Iwakuma.
Solid spring for Seattle.
I have not checked in on him in
solid
the spring.
Solid spring for Seattle. So
was he the number two or number three? I guess he was number three prospect on our World Baseball Classic list
behind
from
Chapman
2009.
Darvish.
Yeah, those are the top two guys.
Iwakuma's had some injury problems since then, but still, guy knows how to pitch.
He does know how to pitch. He's got a nasty split-finger fastball.
I mentioned this in the Bapper today. And by the way, if you're hearing this and you don't get the Baseball America Prospect Report, that's where we're talking about the Bapper. It's an email, free email we send out every day. You can go to our little email, the bottom right-hand side of our front page, sign up for it. We send it out every weekday during spring training and during the season with kind of what's happening with prospects, line scores from the day before.
Worth the price because it's free.
And a guy who jumps out from that is, I don't think he's going to be a significant role right away, but the Royals with Soria's injury, if Soria is out for the year, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Kelvin Herrera, I don't think is going to close this year, but his role becomes more important because they're going to have, I'm sure Broxton is, you know, they're going to try Broxton, Greg Holland, maybe Aaron Crow, all those guys.
They have moved Crow back to the bullpen, right. I guess, for now.
But with all that, Herrera has the stuff. His stuff is as, he may be half the size of Jonathan Broxton, but his
right.
stuff is pretty equal. And so his role goes from being kind of more of a, well, can he help us with some innings, to a guy who really could end up having a reasonably significant role for them, I think, now.
JJ, I think that about does it, since we're an hour in. So I didn't realize we were going to take that long with the podcast
today.
But
we always do.
Well, we didn't for the National League, but we did for this one. But lots of great questions on Twitter. Again, you can send those in to us at John Manuel BA, at JJCoop36, or podcast at BaseballAmerica.com. We will be back probably tomorrow with another podcast when we talk organization talent rankings with the great Jim Callis. So for JJ Cooper, I'm John. See you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.